Welcome to Community Spotlight. My name is Paul Tolley and it is my pleasure to welcome Asedi community member Salim Caro to the 2ARM studios. How are you going, Salim?
Good, thank you. Thank you, Paul. And thanks for the opportunity and it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I think all Armidale residents will know that we have a thriving Asedi refugee community here and many will have Asedi friends, but can we start by talking a little about Asedi culture? People may not be aware, but Asedi people are not Arabs.
Yes, you're right. The Asedi community, they are living at different religions of the Muslim or the Arabic religions. So we have our own religions and it's completely different to the Muslim or the Arabic or even the Christian religions. So we do worship for the God and sun. The sun is very significant in our culture. And also we worship for the peacock, which is the angels for the Yazidi community. And it's very peaceful community and mainly living now in Iraq, in northern Iraq, in Sinjar, and also in Nineveh, in Bashik and Bahzane. And we used to live in, so we still have some in Turkey and in Syria and Tehran as well. But now the most area where Yazidi lives is northern Iraq in Sinjar.
Historically, did you also live in Kurdistan?
Yes, and our temple we call Lalish is located in Kurdistan region, and we do have a few villages who the Yazidi community lives in Kurdistan region. We call Sharia, Hanke, and also Derbun, and some of them also living in Shekhan, which is in Kurdistan region.
It must be difficult because I know. Because Asedi people live in Iraq, that many Asedi people speak Arabic, but this is like speaking the language of your oppressor, isn't it?
Yeah, so the education back home in Iraq was in Arabic, only Arabic in the past, and recently they have educated people in Kurdish language as well. So the Arabic is the first language, and the people who been in the education, they can speak Arabic, and the people who do not attend the education or the schools, they cannot speak Arabic. So, and that's another issue now we are facing here in Australia, the Yazidi language not being recognized by the Australian interpreting services or by the Australian government, which has been very difficult for the Yazidi community. And they called us as a Kurdish Kurmanji language, which is completely different to the Yazidi language. And due to the miscommunication, the wrong surgery has been done for our community members here in Australia. And I did myself with support from some friends, submitted two submissions to the NATI to get the Yazidi language recognized and added to the interpreting services. But unfortunately, both submissions were being rejected by NATI. And we are in a process now with the ethno-language, which is the body language for the whole language around the world. So we're still waiting for their response.
I had some experience of this, and that's the reason I know that the language, particularly the older people, speak Kurmanji, because I had a friend, an Asedi friend in Armidale, and I was helping him with some medical issues, and the only interpreter they wanted to provide was an Arabic interpreter.
Yeah, so some, as I said, the Yazidi community who not been in the education, who not been educated back home, they cannot speak Arabic. And the only people who've been in the school or in the universities, they can speak Arabic.
How long have you been yourself in Armidale and how did you come to be in Armidale?
I have been in Armidale for 5 years now. I came in July 2019. As a humanitarian, under the humanitarian visa as a refugee because of what happened to us during the Yazidi genocide that occurred on the 3rd of August 2014 by Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, ISIS. And on that day, they attacked Sinjar and most of the area where Yazidi lives. And they killed more than 8,000 Yazidis and 6,000 Yazidis who have been forced or kidnapped by ISIS, and we still have 3,000 missing since the 3rd of August 2014. And also, not just killing the Yazidi people, they also destroyed the Yazidi culture by bombing 90 two Yazidi temple or religious shrines, and also so far we got 93 mass graves as a result of that genocide. And it's still an ongoing genocide, unfortunately. And just now, right now, the Yazidi community, since the 10th anniversary of the Yazidi commemoration, we have been receiving 1 million hate speeches from the Muslim religious leaders who lives in Kurdistan, and that's also including the university professor, and in public and in a live videos that saying killing the Yazidis are okay. So we are asking why all of this happened to us. Instead of recognizing what happened to us as a genocide, now they're preparing for the next genocide, unfortunately. And the Iraqi government and the Kurdish government, they both are just watching and doing nothing in this regard.
And I'll come back to some more of that later, and it's very important to talk about. But just coming back to you, you had to leave your home, the country you lived in. You had to make a new life and a new country with a very different culture, and a culture that didn't even speak a language that you grew up with. How difficult was that?
It was very difficult, to be honest, at the beginning. So when we came, like for myself, from my experience, when I came, it's only hi and hello with me in English. And I do remember the next day I went to outside, and my neighbor was just looking at me from like outside. He was also at the backyard, say, "Grandma, how's going?" I would just say what he is saying and what he's talking about. I didn't know anything in English. So I went to him with my poor like a phone to put the in a Google Translator what you said. Then I just in a body language said, "Thank you, I'm okay." It's very difficult at the beginning, but we engage with the wider community, with neighbors, and doing some like some volunteers that helps me to learn the English, and also to be in touch with wider community. So for the elderly people, it's still very difficult due to the language barrier. But as I said,
because how do you learn about a new culture if you don't speak the language of that culture?
Exactly.
How do you catch a bus? How do you do your shopping? How do you all of these things?
It was very, very difficult. But with the support from the great Amida people and also the Yazidi community, they also supporting each other, which made it a bit easier for us. And I just wanted to share that as well. The Yazidi community would like to share food with the neighbors and have a good communication with all of them. But it's a very peaceful community, and they just wanted to live in a peace and to live as everyone else, because we've been persecuted for 74 times. And even if you just say hello to an Yazidi person, he would be like more than happy, and that would mean a lot to the community.
And I can tell you quite truthfully that I've not heard any negative comments about in Armidale about having Yazidi people in the community. I've only heard warm things said. So I hope that's your experience.
Yes, it is, and we are very proud to be part of this beautiful community. And I said in many occasions that we are very proud to be here and to be part of this community. And we cannot say that we are refugees anymore, because we feel we are in our houses, and that's been the Yazidi community has been very welcomed, and we feel safe. That's very important for us after the 74 Yazidi genocides.
How important is it for Yazidi children now going to school, learning in English, making traditional Australian friends? Is that interaction of the kids, your children and others in the school, is that very helpful for bringing people together and for families coming together?
It is very helpful, and the community being like they made lots of friends from the Australian community and from the Aboriginal community, and we have a good connection with everybody here in Armidale. That's very positive, I would say. And like through the events and bringing people together from the different cultures, that will that will help the other communities to learn about others, about in terms of the culture and all the other important parts of the community living as well.
Because children pick up a new language much more quickly than older people do, don't they? So they end up helping their parents and others with English language?
Yes, they do. And it's very important, again, I would say, that we keep our own language as well and teach our kids to not forget the Yazidi language as well. But again, it's very important to learn the English language because we're now here and part of this community.
That was my next question, and you've just answered it in the way I was going to say to you. Do people or do families worry that their children will lose connection with culture and language?
I would say for some families, they may lose that language because the other community members, the community in general, they got a good relationship with each other. But I don't think they will forget that the language for the people who've been born in Iraq, but maybe for the people who've been born here in Australia.
Mm. Yep. Of course. And I struggle in my own mind to understand how difficult your experience and that of other Yazidi people must be, coming to a new country with such a different language and such a different culture and having to leave everything behind. You just pretty much arrive as yourself.
Yeah, well, as I said, we're here now. We feel safe and we feel supported. But our mind's still with our community members, our brothers and sisters who still live in Danja in Iraq and in Kurdistan region in the camps for 10 years now. So it's been 10 years and 70% of the Yazidi community who live in Iraq still in a refugee camp. And there is unfortunately no plan or there is nothing from the Iraqi or the Kurdish government to get the compensation for those families and returning them to Sinjar area. And it's been very dangerous. And since these hate speeches started 2 weeks ago, about 125 families were fled to Sinjar. Even it's not safe for some families, and because of the Turkish bombs and different politics and different army groups who based in Sinjar. But again, it's safer than to stay in the camps and to have all these hate speeches around you. And the government is looking at them and doing nothing, unfortunately.
I'd like the listener to imagine what it would be like to live in a country and live in a situation where you don't feel safe. That must be very, very difficult. There are other Yazidi communities around Australia as well, aren't there? Not just in Armidale?
Yes, so there is about 6,500 Yazidis who lives in Australia, and they live in four different cities, which is Armidale, Coffs Harbour, and Wagga Wagga, and also part of the Yazidi community lives now in Tiomba, in Queensland. And we do have about 10 families who lives in West Australia, in Mygambera city.
So we've talked a little bit, and you've talked about how the fact that Yazidi people are grateful to be in Australia and what Australia does. But I'd be interested to know, what do you think Yazidi people and Yazidi culture has to offer Australians?
Well, there's a lot to offer the Australian, and I can say just one of the examples, like in our culture, when you move to a new street, even not a new country, all the neighbors will come to you and they will support you in terms of like moving to the new house and welcoming you and even cooking the lunch or breakfast or dinner for you while you moving your stuff to the new house. So here in Australia, I can see it's completely different. And when I bought my house in 2021, I moved to the area that was just only one came to me and say, welcome to that area. And all the neighbors, they didn't say like even welcome to the area or welcome to the new house. And I was quite surprised. But what I did after we settled in the house, I did a big lunch and I invited all the neighbors and people around me to come and like to have lunch together. And since that time, like we have good communication and we like offered that instead of not welcoming in a way to be like welcomed and also to have a good relationship with everyone. And I would say it's very important, like, for the Yazidi community to feel welcome even when they move to a new house or to a new area. That's because we've been persecuted, and the trauma and all the things we have experienced through the genocides. So if you have a neighbor, or if you have a friend, or if you don't have any, even if you saw the Yazidi people in the, even in the road, just say hi or hello to them. They will mean a lot.
I think a lot of people living in Armidale have got to enjoy Yazidi naan bread.
Yes. So the Yazidi community is making baking the naan bread, which is very special. Mm. And we do have like the naan bread cooked every 2 days or 3 days, for some families every day, which is very delicious. And I think the Armidale community really like the naan bread.
I think so too. And the reason I think why the Australians who were here already seemed unwelcoming is that in Australian culture, people fear that they don't want to get in the way of other people or bother them or go to their house or be difficult, whereas your approach, of course, is much more welcoming, perhaps. People live in Australia for 20, 30 years and never even meet their neighbours. You probably know this now.
Yeah, it's like I surprised when I hear that and when I saw that. It would be nice to have a good communication with the neighbours and even just have a cup of tea every week or every fortnight, just as a part of the relationship, and also learning about each other and learning about each other's cultures and how things going for everyone. And yeah, just something nice to have a...
I think that, as you said, that simple word, hello or whatever, can make a lot of difference to somebody, especially if they're in a new country. And I think the Yazidi approach to community is probably more like the Aboriginal approach.
Yes, we are. And we do share lots of stuff like the Aboriginal culture. Like you can see the Yazidi families, they're all big families. Like some of them got 13 members, 10 members. And we do live together. Even they are married, so they still live with their parents, and which is also part of the Yazidi culture. And we, as a community, support each other as well. Like, for example, if you are having something and there's no one to look after your kids, you can even live with an Yazidi family or one of your relatives or even one of your neighbors, and just while you're doing some stuff.
Let's go back to the genocide that you were talking about, because there's a commemoration coming up soon, isn't there, for Yazidi people to remember this event. Just talk a little about it again, and I know it's probably painful, but this was the major genocide, you said, was by ISIS?
Yes, so that was the event. It's already over. So it was on the 3rd of August, and on that day, as I mentioned at the beginning,
2014,
by the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, ISIS. And the genocide was pre-planned between the Kurdish government, Kurdish Peshmerga, which was at that time Masoud Barzani, who is the head of the Kurdistan region, and ISIS, because there was 12,000 Kurdish Peshmerga forces and in Sinjar area, and we knew this was going to happen to us in Sinjar, because ISIS were just away about 10 kilometers from Syria, because Sinjar in the border between Syria and Iraq, and also ISIS were in the second large city in Nineveh in Iraq, and we knew that ISIS will come and will begin their campaign and genocide against us. So the Yazidi community wants to be out of that area, and we did try to be out 3 months before the genocide, but the Kurdish government, the Kurdish Peshmerga, didn't allow the Yazidi community to be out of that area. And there was 12,000 Kurdish Peshmerga, and they withdrew from Sinjar with no reason and left all the Yazidi community behind and gave us a gift to ISIS. And their plan was that destroying the land and killing all the Yazidi community and bombing all the religious shrines and But the Yazidi community who became a volunteer, and they defined the families who went to the Sinjar mountain. And most of the elderly people were dead, who could not make the trek to the mountain. And also the kids who have been the second part victims on that genocide. And we do now ask the international communities and the Australian government to do to bring those people who was in power at that time in justice.
I've got some figures here, and I'm not an expert, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but I got some information. It says, over a period of 3 years, Islamic State militants trafficked thousands of Yazidi women and girls, killed thousands of Yazidi men. United Nations suggests that Islamic State killed about 5,000 Yazidis and trafficked about 10,800 Yazidi women and girls. By 2015, something like 70% of the global Yazidi population was displaced by the genocide. 70%.
Yeah, that's right. And we still have 70% of the Yazidi community lives in refugee camps after 10 years, after a decade of the genocide. And we still have 3,000 Yazidi missing. Even the United States and the Iraqi government declared the default of ISIS. There is no ISIS. So the question is, where is the 3,000 Yazidis now who's still missing? And it's been 10 years ago. And I just also wanted to mention that the Red Cross, the International Red Cross, so we did ask them, because they have an office in the Al-Hol camp in Syria, and there is a Yazidi community who kidnapped in that camp. So I did myself ask the Red Cross if we can create a team from the Yazidi community and also in support by the Red Cross, and we can go to that camp and search for the Yazidis. And I'm pretty sure, and I saw the pictures, and I've got the names of the Yazidis who are still in that camp, and it's under the control of the Syrian government. But the Red Cross, unfortunately, did nothing, and they said, we cannot support you in that way. But they're just collecting the information, and I think it's just reporting and getting their funding from the...
So the city community remembers these events. Do you have a special day or a special time when you remember these events?
Yeah, we do remember the Yazidi genocide, the 74 Yazidi genocide on the 3rd of August, in every year, and all the Yazidi around the world will remember this day, just to honor the people of the Yazidi community who lost their life because of their faith, and also to raise the awareness of that genocide, and also do not forget the people who lost their lives, and also would be part of the healing and lighting the candles on the event.
So what happens in Armidale?
So in Armidale, D.C., we started the event on the 3rd of August. It was around 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. So we invited the wider community and government bodies and the organizations and the Aboriginal community and all the wider community to that event. So we did had the Welcome to the Country by Ross Lockloff, the Armidale Aboriginal Keeping Place manager. And also there was a speech from the mayor of Armidale Regional Council, Sam Copeland, and also following by the speech of the Darren Williams, who is the inspector at the Armidale Police Station. And we had three speeches from the Yazidi communities who were kidnapped and survived from the mass graves. And also I did a speech on behalf of the Yazidi community. And after that, we had some pictures and videos of the genocide, and also lighting the candles by the whole community and the wider community. And it was very successful event. Even it was very painful and difficult day, but there was about 500 to 600 people attended that event, and it went very well.
It's important to remember in communities and societies events which go to the heart of people, isn't it?
It is. And I did mention at the beginning, so if you can't stay, because it's very graphic and it's very painful and it's very grave event, so if you can't stay, feel free to leave at any time, because also that's part of the organizing of the event. So for some people, it might be very hard to see those images and even to listen to those words and the horrific stuff has been done to the Yazidi community.
If they've lost family, friends, in terrible circumstances. I've been speaking with Salem Caro, who's a member of the Yazidi community in Armidale, and I'm very grateful that you came in to speak with us today, Salem, and provide some more information and understanding of Yazidi culture and what people have been through and why they're living amongst us in Armidale now. So thank you very much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Paul. And I do appreciate your time. And I hope the wider community can be able to support the Yazidi community and also to make lots of friends from the Yazidi community as a very peaceful community. And just the last thing I wanted to mention. So the ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, killed the Yazidi community under the name of God. So we, as the Yazidi community, we ask by the name of the humanity and peace to get those Yazidi who remain missing, to get bring them back to their families, and also to have the Yazidi language been recognized by the Australian government for the Yazidi community for the smooth communication. And I do appreciate your time on this opportunity. Thank you, Paul.
And if I can say one thing, people should remember perhaps what you said earlier on, which is if you see an Yazidi person in the street or over your back fence, wave and say hi.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul.